Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Hey, y'all, Uncle Jimmy here. When you speak for yourself, you're forced to think for yourself. And when you think for yourself, the sports world looks different. In order to enjoy this podcast and this show, you need to have the courage to look at the world from alternative points of view and not be offended when you disagree. Speak for Yourself isn't your Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram feed. SFY tells you what you need to hear and not what you want to hear. So, welcome aboard, buckle up, and enjoy the ride.
We start today with the big news out of New York. Two weeks into the 2019 regular season, and Ben Roethlisberger is done for the year. Drew Brees is out for 6 weeks, and Eli Manning is benched. The Giants announced today they're turning their offense over to the sixth overall pick in the 2019 draft, Daniel Jones. The kid everyone laughed at the Giants for selecting so high. Jones is yet another mobile quarterback, ending an era for yet another pocket statue quarterback. Jones is following in the footsteps of Lamar Jackson, who ran Joe Flacco out of Baltimore. The college game is influencing the pros. The dual threat quarterback is preferred in the collegiate game and is becoming more popular in the pros. Tom Brady remains the gold standard, and Patrick Mahomes certainly has next, but maybe it's easier to find the next Russell Wilson than it is the next Brady or Mahomes. Or am I reading too much into the end of the Manning era? To me, this feels significant. Archie's boys, Peyton and Eli, defined this era of quarterback play as much as Brady did. You won Super Bowls playing the game from the pocket. Roethlisberger, Brees, Brady, Eli, and Peyton played in a combined 19 Super Bowls in the past 18 seasons. They won 13 in that same time period. Right now, Brady is the last one standing from that group. And besides Mahomes and possibly Jared Goff, the next generation of QB stars are hybrids. Russell Wilson to Baker Mayfield to Deshaun Watson to Dak Prescott to Carson Wentz to Lamar Jackson. It feels like the league is pivoting to dual threat quarterbacks. Or maybe the NFL is Sir Martin Frobisher. Frobisher is the 16th century explorer who sailed to the New World and brought back thousands of tons of iron pyrite to England, believing it was gold. Iron pyrite is fool's gold. Given Russell Wilson's sustained success, it's hard to argue the dual threat quarterback is fool's gold, but maybe it's silver, something less valuable than gold. All right, joining the desk now are Fox Sports college football analyst Reggie Bush and former NFL head coach and longtime NFL assistant Hugh Jackson. Marcellus,
yes, sir.
Start with you. Is Eli Manning's benching another sign the NFL's moving away from the pocket passer?
Absolutely, and I want to highlight another sign, because we've seen signs of this progression over the years. If you go back and watch how the NFL has changed its position from the scrambling quarterback to the mobile quarterback to now the 2.0 quarterback. Damn, these quarterbacks just want to be normal. That's the fight for equality, just to be normal, you know? And they always got to have this asterisk by them, this other line column for them. But It's evolved. Now, if you look at the NFL today and what happened to Eli Manning, I always wondered this as a former defender, when I used to see guys go out there and want to really focus in on just their throwing abilities and being in the pocket, when as a defender, it was much scarier to see a guy who was a dual threat. Mm-hmm. So you should see that now mature into even the 1.0 quarterbacks that have had tremendous success are getting phased out. So, yeah, the advancements in thinking, technology, and the position has us going forward. But let's be real. There's still nostalgia from when we were impressionable youngsters out there. These GMs, these coaches hold on to these 1.0s as long as they can. The game's changed. Mm-hmm. Sooner than later.
Absolutely.
We're going to see all 2.0s.
Yeah. Yep. And I think this is more of a sign that this is what the new generation of QBs look like. Because in college football, every QB can scramble. Every QB takes off and runs. Even Tua in Alabama, who I consider to be probably the most pocket passer out of all the quarterbacks, He will take off and run. He will scramble and extend plays with his legs. Trevor Lawrence, who is, you know, the football guy to quarterbacks now in college football, he's doing RPOs now, right? He's getting involved in running the football as well. So the first time Daniel Jones takes off and runs, the whole stadium is going to get up in applause. This is something they have never had. They have never had it. And so when he takes off and runs and extends a play with his legs, or they're going to be like, damn, that's kind of nice. Like, this is actually, you know, what – this is different, right? Exactly. And so we all get old at some point, right? And this is just part of the process. But, again, I just think this is what all the generation quarterbacks look like now.
You're right. I think this is the new National Football League. You know, when you look at these quarterbacks, I remember back to coming into the league in 2001, and there was Jeff George. Mm-hmm. You know, and now you're just watching how this progression has happened to where we are today. But I think you got to also look in the college game. The game's changed.
Yeah.
You know, the college game, these quarterbacks are now running these systems of RPOs and throwing the ball and involving their whole offensive football team. And the National Football League is starting to do some of that. And so when you look around, these guys that are playing, and they're able to not just play in college, they would have come in first year and be able to play in the National Football League because of those concepts that are now being run in the National Football League. So I think it's just a natural progression that's happening.
I'm going to play a little bit of devil's advocate. Sometimes that's my job. I think, Hugh, for the whole group, I think college is having an amazing influence, but I think also the NFL has changed in terms of the lack of patience. Mm-hmm. Patrick Mahomes is going to be the gold standard at quarterback for the next 15 years. Mm-hmm. He's going to be a traditional pocket guy that may move around just a little bit to throw the ball. But what has happened in the NFL, the reason why I think we're seeing so many of the 2.0s, as you call it, Marcellus, is nobody develops a quarterback anymore. Nobody does what the Chiefs did with Patrick. You just sit down here and watch Alex Smith.
Right.
Aaron Rodgers, you just sit here and watch Brett Favre for 2 or 3 years. Teams now want to get that quarterback, particularly a high draft pick, on the field as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. And the quickest way to do that is to run an offense they're familiar with from the college game.
Absolutely. You have to give that guy an opportunity to be successful. And the only way that you can do that is to have some of the concepts that he's dealt with in college come into the pro game.
Well, Let's talk about that element, but let's also talk about the stigma that came with being a mobile, scrambling 2.0 quarterback. And part of that was leadership in the early years when you were talking about the black quarterback. Let's just not paraphrase everything. And then that turned in, Doug Williams won the Super Bowl, and you started to see that chip away. And then even the great Steve Young wasn't a fully appreciated asset in the beginning because he was a scrambling quarterback.
Yeah, right, yeah.
And I remember that analysis. I was like, what are they talking about? Yeah. The guy could do both. Mm-hmm. Then it came to Michael Vick, and that's when things changed for the better and a little for the worse. Michael Vick was the first overall pick. Michael Vick had a team buy all in to the 2.0 quarterback and construct a roster for him. Michael Vick, being a pioneer, there's a responsibility of being a pioneer because if you don't fully succeed, the door will close behind
you. Absolutely.
Watch what happened with Michael Vick. Balling out of control on the field. Played against, good Lord, he was next level. But then the off-the-field issues and, more importantly, him not being studious through his own admission made people say, let's pause. What was the effect of that? Start hearing guys like Donovan McNabb. Start hearing guys like even recently Deshaun Watson come out. I want to be a pure pocket passer. Because they knew how it would land mentally in the NFL instead of physically on the field. I'm looking at these dudes like, you're going to take away one of your strongest attributes just because it lands better in perception.
Yep.
So that Mike Vick experience was a beautiful thing, but it also gave other guys
pause. I'm not sure, though, it's all perception, though. Because I can't remember who it was that cracked the joke. Maybe it was Rex Ryan this week. You never hear about an old running quarterback.
Mark Sheriff said it on our show.
You never hear about an old running
Randall
quarterback.
Randall Cunningham.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. And so I think a lot of guys just out of like, I want to have a long career.
Yeah.
I want to make as much money as I possibly can. And when 13 of the last 18 Super Bowls have been won by guys that play from the pocket, it's a successful strategy.
I got to push back on that real quick.
Yep.
If all that is available are pure pocket passers, guess who's going to win the Super Bowl?
Pocket passers.
Pocket passers. I mean, it's
not
cooking the books.
Available,
it's cooking the books right there when they do that. I just had to say that.
And the narrative that if I take off and run, I'm going to get injured, as opposed to staying in a pocket, I'm not going to get injured. It's not true because Big Ben, who I just asked you about, gets injured. And is now injured is going to miss the whole season. So I think that narrative is also flying out the door as well.
Reggie, the lifespan of a running back is one of the shortest in the NFL.
Yeah.
Because they take so many hits running the ball.
Yes.
You don't want your quarterback in that Lions then.
But look at Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson does a great job taking off and running, and he gets down. He doesn't take hits. That's why Cam Newton is dealing with these injuries, because he's trying to run linebackers over. Mm-hmm. He's trying to run safeties over. Get down. You cannot survive in the NFL when you're trying to take on people bigger than you or just as big as you.
There's only so many hits that your body has. There's only so many.
And there's an acumen that comes from being a pure pocket passer, tight windows to throw a guy open, leading, knowing the coverage. There's also acumen to being a 2.0 quarterback, when to get down, when to use the sideline as your friend, and situations like that. Look at today's NFL. As you said, 13 of the last 18 Super Bowls have been won by a pocket passer. You know, six of them by one guy, right?
We cooking all these books.
Here's the thing. Of the 32 starters in the NFL, I have calculated easily 15 2.0 quarterbacks. Look at that list right there. And this is all complexions, all likenesses, all backgrounds. Don't let the paint job fool you. Josh Allen has had four games over 95-plus yards rushing. And that's up there in Buffalo. Lamar Jackson, Deshaun Watson, Cam Newton, Baker Mayfield, Russell Wilson, et cetera. You see the list. And there were two guys I left off who were borderline, not because they couldn't, but they just don't elect to. So the point is, we're going to see the Super Bowl winners change. We're going to see the position change. Yep. And if you ever go to a Pop Warner game or a high school level game, coaches are now saying, who wants to be receiver?
Yeah.
And everyone raised their hand. And then he says, now, who can throw out of that? That's the position to play, brother.
I just want that list. And, again, I'm not dissing any of those guys.
Uh-oh.
But, again, I said in my essay, Sir Martin Frobisher brought back thousands of tons of fool's gold. And it took England a long time to figure out this is fool's gold.
That's my list.
And so to that list starts showing up with Super Bowl rings and MVP trophies, like Patrick Mahomes.
Aaron Rodgers has Russell Wilson has one.
Might be
Cam got an MVP.
That might be Sir Martin Frobisher's fool's gold again. I'm just
in the border.
Let's see how it plays out. But hey, quickly, Eli Manning, is he a Hall of Famer?
You know my criteria. Are you better than the worst dude in the Hall of Fame? Damn right, Eli is. No, in all respect, you got. That's why I ain't a Hall of Famer. They can use me. I say yes. You are a two-time Super Bowl MVP.
Absolutely.
You can't take that away.
500 record.
I know where we're going to say all other years, no playoff wins. Mm-hmm. But two times, something your brother didn't even do. Mm-hmm. Something that, respect to Kurt Warner and his greatness, but Kurt Warner's in the Hall of Fame, and some question the fullness of that body of work. I don't, and I don't with Eli Manning as well.
Kurt Warner, MVP.
Yeah, two-time Super Bowl MVP.
I get it. Kurt won the MVP of the whole league. Didn't deserve it. Marshall Faulk should have got that second. But anyway, go ahead.
For me, it's a lot. For me, it's a lot.
No, I agree. I think he's a Hall of Famer, no question. I mean, again, the guy was he's been top 10 in his career in completions and yards and so many other different things. So you're talking about a guy that's won Super Bowls, two-time MVP of the biggest game in the National Football League. And he's done it at a high level, you know, obviously. But that's the question. Is he a Hall of Fame player? Yes, he is. No doubt.
But it's also who he beat
in
the Super Bowl.
Go ahead.
It's Tom Brady. Mm. It's the great Patriots.
Absolutely.
The 16-0 season that they had when people viewed them as unbeatable, right? It's who he beat. It's perception. So, to me, it's not only the MVPs, but it's also who he beat, the Super Bowls. And his brother's Peyton Manning. He got all the perfect recipe to get into the Hall of Fame.
And all the pushback on Terrell Owens and Antonio Brown is, what kind of citizen is he?
Yeah.
Well, this is a model citizen, model teammate, and was a franchise player, so you can't take anything away.
As I'm prone to do, I'm going to play devil's advocate.
Twice? That's great. That's great.
Huh?
But nothing else says MVP to me. I mean, says Hall of Fame lock to me. Look, I get he led a team to two Super Bowls. He's going to make the Hall of Fame. He's from New York.
Yep.
The standards are so low for New York players. that helps you get into the Hall of Fame tremendously. Look, Joe Namath had a losing record in the regular season. Joe Namath is in the Hall of Fame because he guaranteed that Super Bowl and what that guarantee meant to the NFL. Mm. Get it. Eli, to me, not a first ballot Hall of Fame.
Woo!
I would put him in the Hall of Fame, woo, perhaps, but first ballot, I just wouldn't
do
it. I could
see that. I could see not first ballot Hall of Fame.
Both of y'all ain't using your eyes if you can see that. Because let me tell you this. Can you watch a Super Bowl highlight reel without it showing multiple Eli Manning plays? And that's the biggest game.
Yep. Well, it depends on how you define it. I define one of them as a David Tyree play, but Eli would be mentioned as well.
Oh, you think? He threw the ball. Mario Manningham, like y'all forgetting these plays? No, the guy is bona fide in his first ballot, and most important stat of all, second highest paid in NFL history. Come on, man, get that boy love.
Hey guys, this is Jason Whitlock from Speak for Yourself. Are you ready for what's ahead? You can't always predict the future, but you can game plan for it. Generations of families and businesses have harnessed the power of Pacific to help them reach their unique goals. Whether you need to save enough money to meet your needs, ensure your family is protected, or make sure you don't run out of money, Pacific Life has a variety of financial solutions that can help. Pacific Life counts more than half of the 100 largest U.S. companies as its clients and has been named one of the 2019 world's most ethical companies by the Ethisphere Institute. Protecting what matters most to people for 150 years and counting, that's the power of Pacific. Ask a financial professional about how Pacific Life can help you game plan for the future or visit pacificlife.com.
Whitlock and Wiley, Reggie Bush and Hugh Jackson are back. Time now for a big story. Let's move to Cam Newton, who has struggled to start the year, looking inaccurate and out of sync with his receivers, en route to an 0-2 record, but we might have just gotten some insight into why. Cam reportedly showed up to practice in a boot today after aggravating a foot injury that he suffered in the preseason. As of now, Cam's status for Sunday's game against the Cardinals is up in the air. Cam said don't blame the foot for his poor performance last week. The coach said don't blame the foot. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take their advice. I'm not blaming the foot. Mm-hmm. To me, something's not right with Cam upstairs. He said that after the game, I got to go look myself in the mirror. This foot deal to me smells like a smokescreen.
I think that you can attribute all of his issues that we've seen this year to the foot injury. I'm a guy that played with a broken foot the entire season. And yeah, I would.
Quarterback?
Huh? You go. Harder position. I actually needed my feet. Oh.
You just proved my point.
No. I ain't done.
He don't need his feet.
You know it all starts at the ground up. Let me say this. I was just trying to take a shot at quarterbacks, but let me make my point now. This dude felt the pressure coming off of a surgery. This dude also felt the pressure of a franchise that started 6-2 last year and because of his injury couldn't win a game going down the stretch. So then you injure yourself in the preseason. Guess what you're thinking? Can't let these guys down like this again. So I think that pressure and the fact that physically the extremities heal slower. Had that foot injury the entire year, didn't practice one game the entire year. They take forever to heal. The blood flow, the circulation is less than. You can go to the podium like I did that entire year. Oh, I'm fine. Never was I fine. And now you're talking about a position where you actually do need your feet, respect to the quarterbacks. That's where their base comes from. That's where you start your fundamentals. So, yeah, I think that this is a simple correlation. The guy has a foot injury. The guy is coming off a shoulder injury. The injuries are undermining his performance.
But at the end of the day, and Coach can attest to this, if you are suited up on this football field, we expect you to play as 100%.
Yeah.
We got to play through broken bones, fractured limbs, torn ligaments. We didn't have to play through all that stuff. And so that's why I hated when Odell came out and was talking about his hip injury. Because one, you're giving the other team ammunition, right? And at the end of the day, if you're on this football field, I don't care about your hip injury. I want to see you play. I want to see you beat Odell. I want to see you beat Cam Newton. Because even some of those missed throws I saw, he was stepping into that throw. His foot looked fine, right? And so if he re-aggravated it, then that's one thing. But if you are still throwing this football, that don't have anything to do with that foot injury. I understand, like, you got to step into it. And maybe it might hurt. Maybe it might hurt a lot.
Oh, thank you, Reggie. It might hurt.
I'm not him, though. Maybe it might hurt a lot.
I think it does hurt.
But it don't hurt that arm, though. And at the end of the day,
get him, coach, please.
The arm.
Come on, coach.
I think both of you guys have great points.
Mm-hmm. I got great points.
Both of you have great points. But because if you're out there, you're expected to play.
Yes.
There's no doubt about that. Right. You need to be at your best, the best version of yourself, to help your team win. Now, at that position, playing quarterback, when you don't get a chance to practice because you're injured and you don't get that rhythm and timing of your offense, and you can maybe go one day when you can't go the other 2 days, that's tough.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. That's a tough spot to be in. So I do understand that those injuries that he's been dealing with could be a reason why things are not going as well. But at the same time, if you walk out there, Cam, you got to perform.
But the expectation of when you cross the white lines is why you go to the podium and lie to everybody. I'm fine. Because you know the expectation. But the reality is this. We are just one big chain connection. And if one thing is off, compensation occurs somewhere else, and then you're going to see undermine the production, right? So we can't let our eyeballs deceive us and saying, he looks fine.
Right.
As soon as he steps on that foot and he can't put 250 on that foot, he can put 212 on that foot, the rest of that is going to be an errant throw.
No doubt.
And that's what's happening
if
right
they
now.
If they were 2-0, would he be in a walking boot today?
No, he take the helicopter in, like Antonio Brown or something. Air balloon or something. You know how it goes.
We've always got a saying in football, winning cures all.
Oh, period.
Yeah. And so I'm skeptical. They're playing the Arizona Cardinals. This is a game that on paper maybe they can get away with without Cam Newton. And they could go to their backup, Kyle Allen, and steal a victory here and give Cam, because to me, I believe it's above the neck, his problems. I think he said it when he got to go look in the mirror. I think they're probably trying to give Cam an excuse and an out to get his head right, to clear his mind. The guy stood up there and basically beat the table and said, don't blame my injuries, and I need to go look at myself in the mirror. He said it all, and now they come out a few days later, or because they played on a Thursday. Yeah, it's been several days later. Now he's in a boot.
No, don't do that. Once again, don't say now, because he said it after the game. And they took notice of this after the game. My question is your skepticism them he's faking the injury or faking the rehab right now?
No, I think that his foot probably does bother him.
Oh, yeah.
And so he's leaning into that now.
Well, not all 250 is leaning.
Yeah, he's leaning into that now. Because once you get past week one, everybody's dealing with a little something.
Everybody.
In this new NFL where they, because again, I believe why we have so many injuries now is because they're not allowed to hit. And so Sundays is the first time they get to hit, and they fall apart a lot quicker than they did the guys that used to, their body used to be beaten up and taken. That's and true. So I just feel like everybody's dealing with a little something after week one. Cam may be dealing with more than others, but is it an excuse for the poor play, the fumbles? Again, his foot didn't make him fumble twice.
Oh, he's it can.
Come on, man.
Reggie Bush.
First of all, I had to carry football, right?
Yeah, and Reggie Bush.
And my foot is not going to make me lose my grip on
Reggie
that football.
Reggie Bush.
My foot is not going to make me lose my grip on the
ball. The only reason you ever lost a fumble was because of direct contact to the football, Reggie Bush?
Yes.
Oh, I don't direct even got the film
that's
right
that's the
here.
Only way he
Are you kidding me? I've hit a guy before down here, and he said, I'm going to let this go up here. And it happens in the game of football. If you step wrong and you already are walking out there mentally averse, you already know, I'm thinking about my foot, but I'm going to be fine. One, you're already off your game because when you're a thinker, you're slower. You're not in tune with what's going on.
Well, he's not as mentally tough as other quarterbacks is what you're arguing.
So let me ask you a question, Coach.
What is going on here?
If I had a game where I had three fumbles and I came to you, I was like, Coach, man, my leg was killing me. You know, I apologize.
You gotta go.
Well, thank you.
You gotta
thank
go.
Thank you.
You have to
thank
go.
Thank you.
I ain't saying
it. You gonna be like, bro, if you don't get up out of here and go do some ball security drills, and go run through that gauntlet.
Watch the program again. I ain't talking
Look,
to y'all.
Man.
Don't do this to Cam Newton now. This is an MVP, man. Y'all talking about toughness now?
A former MVP.
I ain't say all that.
I'm rooting
Everyone's a former MVP.
You know what he needs to do, honest to goodness?
What?
He needs to take that scarf off
his head. Oh, I knew it. There we go.
And make it a tourniquet on his foot.
Oh, man. I can't. We gotta go to commercial. I can't be a part of this on YouTube.
Do you have a favorite NFL team or player? How much better do you think they play and recover with good quality sleep? More than 1,800 NFL players are now sleeping on Sleep Number beds. Sleep Number is the smartest choice for better sleep and the best bed for couples. Sleep Number beds allow you to adjust on each side to your ideal firmness, comfort, and support. The Sleep Number 360 smart bed senses your movements and automatically adjusts to keep you sleeping comfortably through the night. With Sleep IQ technology inside the bed, it tracks how you're sleeping so you can know every morning how well you've slept, plus gain insights for your best sleep. Experience the smart, effortless comfort of Sleep Number 360 smart bed. Find your competitive edge with proven quality sleep from $999. Sleep Number is the official sleep and wellness partner of the NFL. You'll only find Sleep Number at one of their 575 Sleep Number stores nationwide. Find the one nearest you at sleepnumber.com/cadence. That's sleepnumber.com/CADENCE.
Fox College football analyst Reggie Bush is back with us. Let's move to college football, where a couple of quarterbacks have separated themselves from the pack so far this season. With touchdown Tua and Jalen Hurts dominating early season Heisman chatter, according to FoxBet, Tua is barely edging Jalen as the favorite to win the award, with both way ahead of the rest of the field, which makes sense given their numbers. Both guys are having huge years, with Tua throwing for more yards and touchdowns, but Jalen adding some big rushing numbers to his passing game. All right, look, you know what? I'm going to let you go first, Reggie. Yeah. Who's going to win the Heisman, Tua or Jalen Hurts?
I think it's going to be Jalen Hurts. And I think the way he played the situation, I think he played it perfectly, because I think we saw him grow up and become a man before our eyes. And he went from having to face SEC defenses every week to now playing against Big 12 defenses. So what you saw against UCLA, it, to me, is a microcosm of what's going to happen for the rest of the year, because there is not a team, not a defense on Oklahoma's schedule that is going to shut them down, is going to slow them down. And Jalen Hurts has receivers like CeeDee Lamb. I mean, he has speed at every position. It doesn't matter who he throws the ball to. They all got speed. And so, to me, it's going to be tough for anybody to slow him down. And he's going to continue to put up these kind of numbers week in and week out. Tua has to play Auburn. He got to play LSU. He has to play some tough defenses. So by that, I think that Jalen Hurts wins the Heisman.
Yeah, look, I want to push back on you, but I think that's what's going to be the reality. I've learned a long time ago watching these Heisman hopefuls that when the numbers are comparable, that the story is the trump card. That's what's going to win. And last year we saw with Kyler Murray, that was a better story than Tua in terms of the little engine that could, and wow, this dynamic offense and this football quarterback factory out of Oklahoma. Then Jalen Hurts lands there as well. So now we're seeing the same thing despite having comparable numbers. However, my issue is this. So far, Oklahoma has played weaker opponents. Yeah. They played one Power 5 team, and that's UCLA, which is right now glorified high school out there, the way that the Rose Bowl's looking. I know you love that joke, Reggie. But the thing about it is, if you haven't played the same level of competition and you're losing in some of the major statistical categories to another guy, and Tua is due something of this magnitude. Think about it. If Tua leaves this year for the draft, number one overall pick more than likely, are you kidding me? Tua didn't win the Heisman in either of these years with the numbers he's put up. Yeah. Near perfection if you talk about his touchdown-interception ratio. So I just don't think that he's going to get a chance because of the story out of Oklahoma, but he should.
But also same thing for Jalen. Jalen has more touchdowns than he has incompletions. Yeah. So he's also putting up the numbers to make a case for winning that Heisman Trophy as well.
Yeah. This is going to get ugly. It's going to get ugly because jealousy rules all of man. Three straight years of Oklahoma quarterback winning the Heisman Trophy. People are going to campaign against this. Jalen Hurts' story is so positive, and that kid is such an amazing story that there's going to be some reluctance in September and October.
Yeah, great point.
But come November, it's going to get up. It's going to be damn near like Trump and Hillary all over again. This is going to get ugly. The negative campaigning, and I'm going to tell you what's going to impact it. If Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray struggle in this NFL season in October and November, that's a little gimmicky offense, man. Mm-hmm. Are we really going to do this to Tua? He's clearly the better pro prospect and the better quarterback. And Nick Saban and Alabama fans have the courage to negative campaign. Mm-hmm. And again, and even though it's Jalen Hurts,
yeah,
they have the courage to be like, because look, this is great for the Oklahoma brand. Come here, you'll win the Heisman Trophy. And so if I'm Clemson, if I'm Dabo, if I'm Nick Saban, I don't want Oklahoma to continue with this narrative. And so I look for them to start pushing out the narrative, hey, man, these Oklahoma, it's a gimmick offense. Tua is the real deal. I think it's going to get ugly, and I think there's a chance Tua could win in that scenario.
And I also think you have to understand Lincoln Riley as well, because, you know, when it's getting closer towards the end, Lincoln Riley's going to be trying to push his guy, keep him on the field longer, right? Yeah. Because Oklahoma doesn't have the same defense as Alabama, period. So Tua's going to be sitting by the third or fourth quarter, which he has already done. Against Duke, he was sitting by the third quarter. And so in some of these games, he may be sitting early. Jalen Hurts is going to be playing the whole football game. Even in the Oklahoma game, when they were blowing him out the water.
UCLA.
UCLA game. He was still in there towards the end of the game. We were screaming at the TV, get him out of there, because if he gets hurt, then
he wants a third Heisman.
Hey, let's be real.
He wants that.
Alabama wins this no matter how this plays out, because they can walk around in recruiting and say, even our backups can win the Heisman. Think about that. Can you imagine coming to somebody's living room saying that? You got my son.
Yep. All right, Darnell, do we miss anything?
No, but we want to stick with college football, where Florida State is off to another bad start, and fans seem to be ready to move on from their head coach, Willie Taggart. One four-year-old fan decided to take matters in his own hands, setting up a free Willie lemonade stand to help pay for Coach Taggart's $17 million buyout. He came up a tad bit short of his goal, making only $241. And after the boy's dad matched the total, they sent a check of $482 to Seminoles Boosters Incorporated. Wanted to ask you guys, do you have a problem with this?
That's ridiculous.
I have a big problem with it.
Go.
Huge. And I was upset yesterday. This was on ESPN's homepage. And I was also a four-year-old who basically his dad is trolling Willie
Taggart. His dad wrote that little board, by the way. Yeah. He didn't write that.
We're now elevating trolls. Yeah. And you get to troll Willie Taggart, who's struggling at Florida State. This is a gimmick. It's a troll. It's not a legitimate news story. Obviously, we're talking about it here, but we're talking about it because I wanted the opportunity to shoot it down. It's unfair to Willie Taggart.
It's certainly unfair. I have a four-year-old at home, and I know his limitations.
Right.
Writing that sign.
Heck no.
He's not even counting the money. He doesn't even know what we did out there. So, unfortunately, you know, sometimes you just got to step back from the society that you're a part of and shake your head and say, wow, this is what you're using your child for, using him for, for the elevation of your trolling. It's just, it's upsetting to me as a father and even a fan of the sport who, let's let process play out. We don't know how this is going to work out for Willie Taggart.
And like you said, using him, right? He's using his four-year-old. His four-year-old don't know Willie Taggart or doesn't know what's going on in this situation with Florida State. My four-year-old is trying to figure out how to color or what he's going to eat next or what playground we going to. Like, he's not worried about somebody's job who plays. He doesn't even know what football is yet.
Getting another man fired is not what a four-year-old is worried
about.
The dad is. Exactly. And, again, I saw this on the homepage elevated at ESPN. And I was like, man, come on. Willie Taggart deserves better than this, and we shouldn't be elevating the troll. Reggie Bush is back. We're joined now by Greg Jennings. Time now for Darnell's question of the day. Darnell, take it away.
Yes, sir. Let's move to everyone's favorite basketball family, the Balls, who are making some waves after the latest episode of their Facebook show, Ball and the Family. Social media lit up after this clip of LeVar was being pretty disrespectful to Lonzo. Check this out.
Triple B is always going to be the name, on the fact that it also stands for the three Ball brothers. I'm not changing that at all.
What is your opinion on that, Jordan?
I don't give a about his opinion.
I just want to hear.
But no, listen to me, son. When I come out with a name and then somebody tell me to change it, that's like me telling me to change your name. That's like people saying, change Lonzo's name to Alfonso on the fact that he's been damaged goods for the last 2 years. Why is it messed up? Because one person did something bad?
He was the main person.
He wasn't the main person.
He ran everything.
Dang, he didn't run everything.
All right, guys, you think this was real? Or was this just a publicity stunt?
I'm going to say this. I wanted this question done because I wanted to hear from three fathers. So I want to hear you fathers address this.
I don't think this was a publicity stunt. I can understand some people pushing back at that, but first, what publicity stunt would you run where your leading endorser and basically the face of the brand is hypercritical?
He is the brand.
I wouldn't say that because LaMelo's coming and he's going to be a first rounder as well, and he's one of the B's. So let's just be respectful of whatever the triple B means to you. But there are three B's, and two of those three B's will be in the NBA going forward. So he's the lead of the brand, but he's not all of the brand. And let's be real, LeVar, whatever you want to call him, is a face of this brand. When you see him, you connect it to the brand as well. Yep. That said, as a father, let me speak as a father. This was riveting. The balancing act of identity and territory in terms of who I am as your son, but who I am as my own man. And I go back to the moments when I was a kid and I used to ride my bikes and I ride that Huffy too. I fell off it 1,000 times and to the white meat. And this is what this all looks like to me in terms of being a parent. You go in the house, there's two medicines for you. One day is alcohol, and one day is hydrogen peroxide. We've all been there. We all know we'd rather hydrogen peroxide. Yep. But sometimes, even though the alcohol hurts more, it gets the job done just as well. This was a moment of alcohol on the wound. Yep. If your dad can't tell you what's the reality, which is you are damaged goods. You are number two overall pick that already got traded, bro. You are injury prone. You haven't got your shot right. So the world can say it, and it's supposed to be okay, and your daddy can't give it to you in pure alcohol dose, and you accept it. So to me, I'm not going to side on which one was right, but I did respect that moment of them kind of going back and forth to establish who they were.
Interesting take.
I agree with you. This was not a public stunt. If you look at Lonzo's posture, he is even looking like, I really want to say more, but you my dad.
Yeah.
Like, he's not approaching it from a business perspective where the dad, LeVar, he's strictly business. Like, to your point, I'm giving you alcohol, so I'm going to tell you exactly why this brand can work and will work, but it's not because of you. Mm. And when Lonzo saying, Dad, you've pretty much trying to make this thing work, but the face of it or the person who was facilitating it is gone, and he wants others to have an opinion, the dad is like, no, I don't need anybody else's opinion. I need you to be on board and you to lock it in. But Lonzo looking like that,
another interesting take.
I disagree. I disagree because if my dad ever said to me on national TV, you are damaged goods, we would not be speaking. We would not have a relationship because at the end of the day, that is his seed, that's his son. You are tearing him down in front of the whole world to see. Right? When you go home, that's supposed to be a safe place for your kids. You're supposed to be able to go there, talk to your parents about whatever it is. Yes, they give it to you real, but on national TV like this, in front of the whole world, to me, you're tearing him down even further from whatever damaged goods you are calling him.
So you think this was a publicity stunt?
No, I don't think it's a publicity stunt. I just think that he was out of pocket for saying that to his son.
Why is he out of pocket? The home is supposed to be a safe place, but even as important, a protected place. Guess what? I'm going to tell you exactly what's going on outside this world, as this is, his frustration wasn't in this moment. His frustration was you trying to abort the mission that I started before you even got here.
Has that mission worked?
Yeah, oh yeah. Two of them three kids are
No. We're talking about big baller brand.
The big baller brand worked.
It's been a failure, Marcel.
Okay, I'm gonna give you some other failures. Walt Disney, has that worked? Seven times going bankrupt. Steve Jobs with Apple and failing first. I'm just saying, y'all willing to, end game over there and the beginning game
I'm
over here.
I'm with you. That's why I'm saying.
I'm just asking.
He's saying, Lonzo, you're the reason. Because he is.
He's blaming his son. But the reality is, look, man, this guy's a father and a personal trainer. He is not the head of a major shoe brand.
Oh.
That's been a failure. And Lonzo realizes it and is appropriately as a grown man. And to me, he's the only legitimate thing about Big Baller Brand saying, enough is enough. You done brought in some friend of yours who built us for $1.5 million. That wasn't your $1.5 million from personal training. That was me from playing basketball.
Right.
Enough is enough. Lonzo, and for this, again, y'all, I don't see a business, man. I hear someone's ego who's run amok.
Yes, and he's trying to vicariously live through his kids.
He, He is, but that's why I'm saying it's all about Lonzo. And Lonzo has no say because he is still approaching it as, you're my dad, you're not my business manager or my business partner. You look at his posture and he's like, okay, you got it, dad. That's what he's looking like. If that was anybody else saying that,
yeah,
he would be like, you're fired, you're done.
Why is he saying you got it? That's not a you got it like, okay, that's the got it like, man, whatever.
It is.
It is. It's out of deference.
Like, whatever, I don't really agree with you.
It's out of deference. It's out of reverence. Which I think is still a part of a family relationship.
It is.
But here's the thing, though. He's questioning the commitment to this brand that helped build who you are. Let's be real. When Lonzo was in high school at Chino Hills, first of all, have y'all ever been to Chino Hills? I have. Chino Hills is far as hell from South Central LA. That was a plan. Now, we can laugh at all of his antics you want. He removed himself. I went to school with his brothers, his twin brothers, who got incarcerated, went through the LA South Central issues. He had a plan to take my kids somewhere protected and to get them to an elevated place. Okay. Now, that said, two of the three are NBA bound, if not already going to roll. And then the third one.
Let him out of the nest, Marcel.
Exactly.
I respect that. But
exactly.
He said, in
let
business,
him out of the nest.
What is your commitment to this business? He's just
none.
Questioning that.
Because it's a failed business and his father doesn't know what he's doing. I want to ask Darnell, the young person here, to you have any thoughts on any of this?
I mean, my opinion is that LeVar, kind of what you guys said, LeVar is upset at this point that Lonzo is moving away from the Triple B brand. Yep. Like you said, Lonzo looked at it, he's like, I wanted to be a part of it. It looks like it's failing. I don't like the direction that it's going in. The guy who was leading it gypped us out of money. Right. I'm going to start my own brand, do my own thing. LeVar, as a father, is upset about that. And he's getting a little emotional. That's why he called him damaged goods on TV.
And at some point, my bad, let me cut you off.
You good?
At some point, you got to let your kids be men, right? You can't sit there and try to tell them how to go about business here and how to do this because they're going to resent you when they grow
up.
And they probably already do resent
him. Reggie, is this the point is the question? Because if you, all right, you want to dip, Lonzo? Dip. But why are you now undermining the brand? Why are you now clowning the brand? Why are you now exposing all the ills of the brand?
Because the consumers already did that. The consumers already done
it. So you just gonna add fuel to that fire when they are not a part of this family?
My son, that okay.
Just like his dad being real, I believe he wants to be real, but he's not giving that voice.
People forget early company struggles. I don't think enough people know the line to success is not straight and linear. It's a roller coaster ride to get some traction. And they initially got traction, but
some people
that
are
up.
Bad at business.
Oh, I get it.
So, well,
and
some people were like, this big baller thing's not going to work from the beginning.
That's why you don't mix business with family. That's why you don't do it.
I saw that right there. I'm starting to think you got some type of investment in Big Baller.
No, I actually paid for all my stuff. I'm happy for it. And I'm going to buy it some more if they get some more.
And Lonzo won't wear the shoes because they rip apart and they cheat. Reggie Bush and Hugh Jackson are back. All right, let's return to the NFL. You've heard of beer goggles. It's when a man or woman sees their late night options in an alcohol-induced haze. Have you heard of LeBron goggles? It's when the sports media interpret the world through a LeBron James-induced haze. It happens all the time. In fact, it happened again yesterday. We learned the Jaguars defensive back Jalen Ramsey requested a trade out of Jacksonville. This news calls Hall of Fame quarterback turned ESPN broadcaster Steve Young to complain that the NFL must stop its league from turning into the NBA. Pro Football Talk's Mike Florio added to the noise, penning a story that the Antonio Brown saga and Ramsey's trade demand suggest that player empowerment has invaded the NFL the way it has the NBA. Young and Florio might not realize it, but they've been injected with the false social media narrative promoted by Nike and LeBron James. The swoosh wants you to believe LeBron James is the second coming of Muhammad Ali and that he has empowered football and basketball players to break the multi-million dollar gold chains that white billionaire owners have used to make their black lives not matter. It's all bullshit. Jalen Ramsey isn't the first NFL player to demand a trade from the team that drafted him. Midway through the 2008 season, Hall of Fame tight end Tony Gonzalez asked the Chiefs to trade him. He didn't want to be a part of their rebuilding process. Gonzalez was pissed when Chiefs general manager Carl Peterson declined to do so. The Chiefs fired Peterson after the season. Gonzalez asked the new GM, Scott Pioli, to trade him, and Pioli dealt Gonzalez to the Falcons. I covered all this for the Kansas City Star. LeBron James and the NBA had nothing to do with Gonzalez's desire to leave Kansas City. Hell, I'll give you another one. Steve Young witnessed 49er slave Joe Montana demand a trade off the San Francisco plantation. The 49ers wanted to give Montana a contract extension and make him compete with Young for the starting job. In terms of NFL players, there's nothing new here. What's new is the mainstream media's fixation on promoting the narrative that NFL players are mistreated, discriminated against, and trapped in a system inferior to the NBA. LeBron James and all these modern football and basketball players are all standing on Deion Sanders' shoulders. Primetime is the Dr. Dre of player mobility. Deion started this gangster shtick, and this is the freaking thanks he gets. Deion pitted the NFL and Major League Baseball against each other. He cut deals to play both sports at the same time. Deion played for the Yankees and the Cowboys. He played in the World Series for the Braves. He played in the Super Bowl for the 49ers and the Cowboys. At the height of his power and at the age of 28, Deion and his agent, Eugene Parker, held the Deion Sweepstakes. The Deion Sweepstakes was a successful version of the decision long before anyone had even heard of LeBron James. For the whole summer of 1995, Deion jetted across the country dangling his services in front of what felt like half the NFL. Steve Young and Troy Aikman promised to restructure their contracts so the 49ers and Cowboys could get Deion to commit to a long-term contract. Deion signed with the Cowboys in week two. Jerry Jones gave Sanders a deal that made him the highest paid defensive player in the league. Jalen Ramsey showed up to training camp in the back of a Brinks truck. He wants to play man-to-man against the top receivers because he wants to be prime time. He's not thinking about LeBron James or the NBA. If you take off the LeBron goggles social media and Nike have placed on you, it's rather easy to see what's going on here. NFL players are utilizing the freedom and power they won in 1993 when free agency began. All right, guys, Marcel, let's get us started.
Yeah.
Is the NBA's influence on NFL players overblown?
Absolutely. And you nailed it, so it's not much I can add to it other than people were guilty of being prisoners of the moment, not well-researched, maybe not old enough to reference those moments through experience, but it's kind of sad. That's how our culture goes right now. People throw something out there for the sheep, and everyone follows, and they think it's an original idea when it's nothing but just a like and retweet request, and that's what's happening, sadly enough. I remember Carson Palmer did this, and Carson Palmer did it in 2011. Jay Cutler did it in 2009, to add some other names. Only thing I can say that it is a little different, slightly different, is no longer of Deion's and Joe Montana's era do you need to be a superstar to try and pull this. Now you could be non-superstar, just tier two, whatever it may be, Jalen Ramsey. And it's kind of trickled down to those guys. So I give respect to more guys feel empowered in that degree, but this is an old story.
Yeah, I mean, I like seeing players take the power back, but not like this. Because at the end of the day, if you are requesting a trade because your coach didn't make a certain call on the football field, there's an issue with that. And to me, this is just the NFL's version of the transfer portal in college football, right? I don't win the starting job, or I don't get what I want, or I'm not happy, so I'm just going to pack up and leave, right? And the grass ain't always greener on the other side, I promise you, because maybe Jalen is thinking that, well, if I request a trade, I might end up with the Patriots, right? Like AB.
Yeah.
Nah, bro, it don't always work out like that. And so, to me, you show up in the Brinks truck, and then this is what we get. Like, come on, like, you are Jalen Ramsey. Don't forget that. Like, you one of the best corners in football right now. You're supposed to be a shutdown corner. And then we see this on the sideline because your coach didn't challenge a play. Like, I got an issue with that.
Before you go, Hugh, I do want to say one thing. Jalen Ramsey's made it clear he and his agent did not leak this. They wanted to keep this private. So clearly this is coming from Jacksonville in his mind. And Jalen Ramsey has been quite adamant he's going to show up this Thursday and ball out for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
And he is. He's a tremendous football player. But it's really interesting because I think there's a lot of players that want to be traded that make comments that never come out.
Yeah.
You know, you never hear about it. Mm-hmm. I think that this day and age of social media and the things that all of a sudden goes from point A to point Z that fast, here it goes. You know, it's a time in the past a player say, I want to be traded. You might have heard about it 2 months from then. You know, now it's sight of the moment. Here it comes. We talk about it and we have to deal with it. But again, there are more of those situations happening this year. There's more of this talk of guys saying, I want to be moved, or I don't want to play here. I don't want to be in this environment. When you look at the Miami Dolphins, there's so many guys going off that team, you know, all of a sudden. So I think that's affecting everything, too. You see a lot of players being moved for draft picks. You see a lot of players being moved because they want to be someplace else. We are going to have to deal with this a little bit.
Oh, so you think this is an issue the league is going to have to address and deal with?
I do. Yep. I do. I totally do, because there's been I just get a feeling that there's been more of that this season than there's ever been.
And it's been really publicized, too, on the biggest stage, right? Like, AB was the biggest one. But at the same time, listen, what happened to the old days was like, if you didn't win the spot or if things are not going well, like, you still got to show up to work, right?
And so Jalen Ramsey's going to do that.
I'm saying he's going to do that. But there have been other guys who have not wanted to do that. And so I think that is getting passed along to other guys where they feel like, I can, just because I don't want to be here, I'm going to pack up and leave.
You know, it's just, our NFL has always protected the shield. That's been its number one priority. We all respect that.
Yes.
And its greatest enforcer has been non-guaranteed contracts. And it's interesting, the closer players get to guaranteed contracts, the more empowered they feel, because basically, let's be real about it. You love the game, but you love that dough, and that's what you're going to take away from it. I remember sitting there in Jacksonville's meeting room, and our coach put up the shield, and he drew a shield maybe 3 inches high, and then he grabbed his backup lineman, 6'6", 330, and put him right next to it. We were all cutting up. We weren't being disciplined. We weren't playing up to potential. And coach said, I want y'all to tell me which one is bigger up there, this little 3-inch shield and this 6'6" offensive lineman. He said, it's the shield, and don't you ever forget it. If y'all don't get in line, guess what? That's what we're going to protect. That's what's more important. That's what was here before you, going to be here after you. If you hear that same message right now, there is a player or two saying, you sure? You sure that shield's bigger than me now? And I think, in part, like you always say, social media has these guys full of some gas.
Yep.
The contract is looking a little different, closer to that guaranteed amount.
Yep.
So it feels different, but like I said before, it's the age-old
issue. Do you believe Hugh's perspective that there are more guys wanting to be traded than back during your era? Because my thought would be there's always 15 guys on the team that would be like, man, I wouldn't mind playing here or there in my hometown or for this team or that team.
I play with a Hall of Famer who, I say it daily, but at least every week would tell me, man, if you ever could move and get up out of here, get up out of here. I'm trying every single week. And I'm like, you killing the game. And you talking about you trying to get up out of here? The point of that being, I've seen it all throughout my career and post-career. Guys are always, I mean, I wanted to transfer from Columbia to go back to Cal Berkeley just because I wanted the grass is greener. Like, this is nothing new except.
We would have took you if I was there.
You would have. He's like, he talked too much. I don't want that dude on my team. But yeah, it's an age-old problem. I don't see the NFL legislating this because it really kind of undercuts what they're trying to do in terms of the game is growing, player salaries are growing. How do you legislate this when you're really empowering these guys through salary?
I think that, I mean, one of the main reasons I brought this up is because I get so tired of football players not celebrating other football players. And so I look at Deion Sanders as a legend, the ultimate legend. And so when I look at Jalen Ramsey, I don't have to speculate about who he's trying to be. He wants to be Deion. He's basically stated it.
Yeah.
And all of his actions scream, I want to be Deion. But somehow the media go, oh, he wants to be LeBron James. And Marcellus, I think you're exactly right. As the contracts get fatter and fatter and more guaranteed money, look, Julio Jones has a different personality, so he'll never be a problem.
Yeah.
But when you give a dude $66 million on signing day, you're giving him a lot of power.
Well, you know why the media keeps playing this same song?
E-40 talks about this. He's been in the rap game 30-plus years. Yep. And never's in a conversation of GOAT status, even though his longevity should put him somewhere in that conversation. Mm-hmm. And he says, people always ask him, well, how do you stay alive? How do you still stay relevant 30 years later? He's like, a lot of these kids weren't even born when I put out my first song. Guess what? I put it out again, the first time they ever heard it. And I just keep rinsing and repeating that. A lot of these journalists, they ain't get they do, man. And now they just putting out stories that is old as hell to us, but new to these youngsters and misleading them to make them think like they actually birthed a new idea. Dion did this, Montana did this, and we could go countless others. Just regurgitation.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.
Greg Jennings back with us. Let's move to Baltimore, where Lamar Jackson has looked like a new man the first 2 weeks of this NFL season. Leading the league in passer rating, Sunday he'll face off against another young gun, the ultimate young gun, Patrick Mahomes. But Lamar seems to have some extra motivation this year, telling reporters he's been not bad for a running back and tweeting negativity is just a little boost after his week two win over the Arizona Cardinals. I believe that all the criticism and skepticism of Lamar Jackson has actually been great for him, and he has used it as motivation. Don't know if it's going to help him this Sunday against Patrick Mahomes.
Hello!
but I look at even a Dak Prescott and what he's done. Criticism, I think, a lot of times is the fuel that athletes need to go to that next level.
I think you're wrong. I think that a lot of people want to take some form of credit.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, I'm about to say some form of like responsibility for this success, or certainly sometimes you get ahead of it to anticipate the decline, and then you say my criticism's warranted. This is a guy who was internally motivated. It comes from in here. It does not come from out here. You know why? He's already won a damn Heisman. He won a Heisman. He had video game numbers in high school. This guy became Lamar Jackson before any of this criticism, and a lot of the criticism was misplaced. The guy has won 8 of 10 ball games, was in the playoffs with a doomed Baltimore Ravens team, and now the criticism has got to him. It's amazing that this offseason, as soon as it ended, he said, I'm going down to Florida and I'm training and I'm coming back better. But the critics want to say that we're the reason, but now all he's doing is saying, I'm reminding you guys who I am, who Lamar Jackson is. So I'm not taking credit for this.
Do you think Lamar agrees with you, or do you think there's nothing to his tweet that negativity is a little boost?
I think that you got to separate reason from reminder. I can do something that everyone thinks I couldn't, you know, leave the NFL and host a show one day, you know? And I could just tweet out something, ha, 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 he who laughs last. But y'all ain't the reason I'm here. The reason I'm here is because I put in a lot of work. I stay on Google. I did my research. I'm watching the games. Like, I just think this is one of those moments you remind people, but let them know they're not the reason.
Yeah, I'm with Jason on this one. I think this has been a little bit of a boost. And you got to understand what criticism really is to guys like Lamar Jackson. It's a little boost, but it's not what fuels me. It's not everything. It's not the totality. Mm. Yes, has he been special? Of course. But when you have constructive criticism and you are a good player that needs to take that next level to be great, you are listening to what everyone is saying, but you already know it's true. You know what to pick out of it. So for even myself, when I talked about Lamar Jackson, I said, well, he has to show that he can be accurate. Now, I don't care who he's been accurate against. Whatever the two teams were, he's proven that he's taken that step and those strides to do those things. So has he paid attention to it? Yes. Just like a great educator, a great parent, a great coach, they're going to critique you constructively. And if they can't do that, then there is no room for growth if you can't receive
that. The runway of my growth is not paved by you critics. One, I would think that his growth maybe is attributed to Greg Roman, a new offensive coordinator who got Kaepernick right first iteration. Maybe it's the fact that he had a training camp where he's actually the starter. Maybe that has something to do with his growth. Maybe it's the fact that the guy who won a Super Bowl for this franchise and was the highest paid player is no longer taking oxygen out this room. This is my house. Maybe those are more contributing factors than the fact that we sit here and just say something against him on Twitter and think that he's responding to that.
Look, But there's, it's a pie.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so I think there's percentages.
Okay.
Those things you said are part of the pie.
Yes.
Greater slices, bigger.
Maybe, maybe. I'm going to tell you why I'm this way, Marcellus, is because, just being quite honest, my whole career has been fueled by criticism. People say, oh, my God, how do you read your Twitter mentions? It's like, that's my vegetables. That Twitter career, people, oh, my God, people are so negative. I know, it's great vegetables. Because it literally has fueled my entire career since 1990 is people not thinking I can do it and people putting their names on thinking I couldn't do it. Love it. It literally, I wake up every day thinking of my critics. I can't wait to prove them wrong today. And I'm built funny, different, think different, whatever.
Yeah.
And I just think Lamar Jackson seems to have a little of that in him too.
Shoot, he said it. He said a little negativity is just a little fuel boost. Like, he's saying it. Like, I listen to what people are saying. It's not the determining factor. Yeah. And what you're saying, yes, does it carry weight? Of course. But anytime a player has the ability that he has, you have to be able to identify areas where I can improve. I heard you say it, Jason. He can't take these hits. As a running quarterback, he has to learn how to get down. Has he been doing that? Yes. Yeah. So he's listening, but he also already understood, I have to do this. It's not just because they said I need to do it. Yeah, they're saying it because they're identifying what I know I haven't been able to do. Do I know I need to do it? Yes. In order to take the next step, I got to start implementing it, regardless of who my opposition is.
Without semantics, I think we're saying the same thing, because we can never eliminate all critics. So therefore, any level of success is always going to have some attribution to a critic. Like, oh, you got a little better. They were talking bad about you. You got better. But I'm from a mindset of success begets success. I'm from a mindset that I'm not going to limit my potential based on what others are saying. So in your example being Jason Whitlock, what happens when that noise reduces to a level where you don't even notice it or feel it? There's still a climb.
I'll create it.
You'll create it?
No, I will. I really will.
Okay.
Just like Michael Jordan made up stories and lies and things. Like, I don't have to do it. I can just go to my Twitter feed every day. Uncle Jimmy's here. All right, to help us talk about our approval rating for Eli Manning. But big dummy of the day. Very easy today.
Yeah.
Very easy.
Well, I don't agree with you too many times, nephew.
You and your critics.
You sure right about this one. Marcellus, you got to get this heat, man.
What's up?
You sat up here and tried to defend Cam for having a hangnail. Talking about, that's a good reason to fumble three times if you got a hangnail.
You ever had a paper cut hangnail, my brother?
It didn't make me fumble or wreck a car. I still got other obligations.
Man, it's real.
Or wear a headscarf.
All right, let's talk Eli Manning, who was benched today by the Giants in favor of rookie Daniel Jones. The move was all but assures that Eli's 15-plus year run as the Giants quarterback is over. Marcellus, should Eli demand a trade out of New York?
Trade? Hell no. Better put some respect on Eli's name. Stay still, Eli. You're a brand in New York. But you got 4 kids under the age of 8. You're 38 years old. You've built a legacy. Stay still. Cash in on your name and your game. Where else would you go?
All right, Uncle Jimmy, should he demand a trade out of New York?
Who give a damn how many kids he got under 8? I got 8 kids under 8. That ain't no business or nothing. Hell yeah, he need to demand a trade. Immediately. in an expeditious type manner. And I mean this seriously.
Oh, Lord.
Hey, man, you need to walk into John Moore's office. Look at him dead square in his eyes. Look at him like this.
With those on.
Look at him like this. Don't go in there with that old goofy ass look you be having. Ain't nobody gonna take you seriously, okay? Walk in there and tell them everything I done for the Giants, demand a trade. You demand that Daniel Jones be traded immediately. Now, y'all sitting up there laughing.
Yes.
Y'all laughing.
Yes,
hey, I tell you what, how'd that work out for Tom Brady? Who won the Super Bowl last year?
Ooh.
Hey, he ran Jimmy G's ass up out of town. And how did he reward Robert Kraft? What a Super Bowl.
Andrew Bledsoe.
Hey, bro, I'm just telling y'all, Uncle Jimmy like what God like, and that ain't nothing but the truth. See, I went through the same mess with Maydessa and my 4th ex-wife, Keita. See, Keita came in. She was new, but she came in creating a disruption in the bedroom. I mean, the locker room. You know, so just based off them actions alone, she had to go. Mm. You know? And Mae Desi could force a trade like that because she had time and grade.
Time and what?
She, I look, time and grade. Merkelis, I know you and my nephew. Y'all don't know nothing about that. Mm-mm. See, because y'all ain't out here amongst the young people. Y'all ain't out here grinding amongst the common folk like Uncle Jimmy.
Oh, you are.
Time and grade. What is time and grade?
Yeah, what you talking about, Willie?
See, she just had seniority.
Oh.
Or she used to say she had that WHIP. Weight has its privileges. So in other words, she just didn't like Keita.
We privileged.
And when you got that type of disruption going on, somebody got to go. And I had to admit it after I evaluated it. You know, Keita did kind of have a butter face. We liked everything about a butter face. That's kind of how New York feel about Eli Manning. They like everything about him but his goofy ass face. See, Uncle Jimmy's a firm believer that you dance with the big girl that brought you to the fair.
Fair.
You know, Uncle Jimmy ain't no surgeon, but he know how to operate, okay? And see here, I'm telling you, Eli,
I mean,
you need to get that little whippersnapper, Daniel Jones, up out your bedroom before you have some problems.
All right. Thank you, Uncle Jimmy.
Time and grade, huh?
Hey, I'm telling
you. Great.
Time and grade. WHIP, baby.
Let me, whip appeal is what they call that. Anyway.
Yeah, right.
I got Eli at a 69.
Yeah.
Down 1 point from my last time. 13 job performance, 18 all-time greatness. 21 in character. He's handling this benching well. Up a couple points in authenticity.
Oh, man. Job performance, you got benched. But you're still Eli, so you get a one in that category. But he is down for me as well. Don't force a trade. Everywhere you go, there you are, Eli.
Hey, man, force that trade. Get that dude up out of here, man. You can do that, Eli.
It ain't gonna work.
You don't need that in your bedroom, man. You got that juice. Tell that dude get the hell up out of here.
Twitter has Eli at a all-star level, 42%.
Hey, college football fans, Joel Klatt here. And over on my podcast, The Joel Klatt Show, we discuss the best teams, players, and storylines in all of college football. Any questions? Then send them in to the Joel Klatt Show mailbag, and I'll answer them. Tap the banner to follow The Joel Klatt Show on Spotify.